Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, my name is Yvonne Ortiz. I am the Training and Education Specialist at the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence. Thank you for joining us today and welcome to our show titled We Can Stop It Together, Building Strong Runaway and Homeless Youth Partnership. As you know, November is National Runaway Prevention Month. And at the NRCPV, we're committed to raise awareness of youth runaway issues. It is important for our constituents to learn and understand solutions that can help prevent youth from running away. Every year, we partner with the National Runaway Safeline and other national partners to raise awareness about runaway and homeless youth crisis and the issues that these young people face. This year's theme, More Than the Ice, Meet represents a full picture, the various at-risk and underserved youth populations affected, and understanding of all the pieces of youth situations to best give them help and hope, and the services available to do that. Today, we have the pleasure to be joined by two amazing organizations that serve this population. We have Manny, and we have Bridge Over Troubled Waters. First, let me introduce Elizabeth Jackson. She's the Executive Director of Bridge Over Troubled Waters. She has more than 22 years of professional experience within organizations whose mission is to provide transformational service to at-risk youth. Her expertise extends across the fields of counseling, education, and prevention. Elizabeth is a member of the accompanying Young Commission of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, City of Boston Continuum of Care Leadership Council, City of Cambridge Homeless Shelter Commission, Midtown Park Plaza Neighborhood Association, Massachusetts Housing and Shelter Alliance, MANI, and Opportunity Youth Collaborative. Elizabeth has a master's degree in human services management from the University of Massachusetts Boston. Also joining us from Bridge Over Troubled Waters, we welcome Richard Brunson. He is the Coordinator Supervisor of Counseling and Support Services. Richard began his career at Bridge Over Troubled Waters in 1981 as a counselor after spending a few years teaching history at Boston English High School. He received his bachelor's from UMass Boston, his master's from Simmons College, and is a high school graduate of the New York State School for the Blind. We also welcome Kristen Trofa. She's representing MANI today. She's the Associate Director at MANI. She leads MANI's efforts to generate and replicate effective innovations through training and technical assistance, thus improving outcomes for youth and also the resiliency of the organizations that work with this population. Kristen spent 14 years providing capacity building support services to youth and family services organizations statewide, regionally, and nationally. Kristen has also managed and directed prevention and intervention programs that operated locally and nationally, including working with programs serving runaway and homeless youth. Welcome, everyone. So let's start talking by our friends from Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Welcome, Richard and Elizabeth. Are you there?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. Thank you.
Great. Awesome. I'm very excited to have you joining us. So as maybe some of our constituents don't know, but Bridge Over Troubled Waters is one of Boston's premier organizations dedicating to transforming the lives of runaway homeless and at-risk youth. Elizabeth, can you tell us a little bit more about the services that are offered?
Yes. So Bridge offers a wraparound continuum of care approach in a multi-service system based on youth development model. The agency reaches out directly onto the streets and in shelters where homeless youth gathered. We have a street outreach program, the mobile medical van, a runaway and family support services. We have counseling and case management, transitional day program, drop-in center, education and career development, emergency residential services, long-term transitional living program, and a single-parent house.
Wow. And what are the ages that you're serving?
From 14 to 24.
Okay. Wonderful. Richard, around how many young people seek services each year, and what type of services do they seek the most?
We serve about 3,000 youth each year, and we usually do like 50 intakes a month. Mm-hmm. We provide substance abuse counseling. We provide education through GED, HICEP, and we have the transition living program for kids who are homeless who are trying to stabilize their lives. We also have services for kids who are on the streets and are looking for survival needs. We provide breakfast, lunch, laundry, showers, and we do case management, kids who are looking for housing. Mm-hmm. We provide those services also.
And most of the kids that come into Bridge come through the street outreach program, our transitional day program, and our emergency supportive services, and our counseling services is actually higher than our education services that kids come seeking for services. So usually they come in for the emergency or counseling services to street outreach.
Wow. Can you tell us a little bit more about the, and I'm amazed about the mobile medical van, what type of services do you offer? You know, we know they're medical, but do you partner with other organizations?
Yeah, the mobile medical one has actually been around for 45 years.
Wow.
And we started the mobile medical van back in the 1970s because the street outreach team was out on the streets giving kids sandwiches and hot chocolate and trying to figure out where what type of services they needed. And they found then in the 70s that the kids had a lot of medical concerns and issues that they couldn't follow up with. So we partnered with Mass General Hospital and started our medical van, which made us in partnership with Children's Hospital, Sydney Borum Clinic, Healthcare for the Homeless Partnership. So we have a lot of partnerships with the local hospitals in the area. And I'm missing naming a few. And it also gives it's a gateway into the kids coming in for services. So we take care of their quick medical needs. And then sometimes they come to the van 3 to 6 months before they even walk foot into our building.
We also provide dental services for the kids who are a lot of times reluctant to go to dentists. So we have volunteer dentists who come here during the month.
Yes.
Wow, what an amazing program. You guys should be really proud of the accomplishments. So most of our listeners are advocates from local domestic violence programs and sexual assault programs, and some of them have outreach for teens. But we would like to talk a little bit more and try to help them. And one of the questions that I have is how do we talk to kids about breaking the cycle of violence in a way that is effective?
One of the things that we do is to try and have them look at what's going on in their lives and how the abusive relationships are impacting on how they live their daily lives, and in particular with the moms, and how it's impacting on their kids, and make them realize that this is not something that they want to bring their kids up with.
Mm-hmm.
We also try to provide counseling in a way that change behavior.
Mm-hmm.
We use the model Stages of Change,
mm-hmm.
which talks about pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, which we try to get them to look at admitting that there is an issue and working on how to change that issue.
Right, and most of the kids that come into Bridge, their first reaction is not to say, I've been in a DV situation, or
mm-hmm.
I've been hurt before. That's pretty much the last thing that usually comes out. So what we do from the beginning is building a relationship with them so they can trust us. Mind you, these kids have had adults in their lives who they've either been in and out of systems or had adults in their lives who abused them before. So what makes us different than any other adult? So they're testing us pretty much. So we use all that building a relationship with them and seeing how they're acting and talk to them about it and say, oh, you know, every time you get a no, you punch a wall, or every time, why is
mm-hmm.
that? And really get into the harm reduction of trying to figure out why is it that you get so upset there, and not just today of why you're getting so upset, but how do you deal with this in the future, and who taught you how to deal that way, and how do we make sure we break that cycle?
Mm-hmm. And for those that are perpetrating the abuse that you mentioned, how do you work with them to acknowledge so that they can acknowledge their behavior and what they're doing is abusive? Because some of our kids, they don't recognize it.
I think part of that is to talk to them about what's going on right now with relationships, and also try to talk to them about the history of how they got to be where they are and how that isn't really helping them move forward. Having them look at how they build healthy relationships, what healthy relationship is, and to have them acknowledge that this is something that they want to change, which sometimes becomes very difficult because they're so used to acting a certain way. So we try to teach them how to behave in a way that is not only safe and beneficial for them, but also for relationship building.
And also teaching them other ways to burn all that energy and anger. So if it's going to the gym, is it, we can't belong to the gym because, you know, we can't afford to it. So really looking at membership. So we partner with the local YMCA and try to make sure kids are going and, you know, weightlifting, or we have the sneaker club, or they go out and go running around the park, or yoga classes. What other ways for you to release steam and really teaching them those skills? Because no one taught them that. Somebody taught them how to be angry, but no one taught them how to channel that anger, and we become the teachers of that, of what other ways can you do it. Listen to music, how to say I need 2 minutes, and really practice those behaviors and model those behaviors and say, it sounds like you might need a 5-minute break, why don't you go out and walk around and come back, and really teach that, and it takes time, but really get to teaching them other behaviors of how to act when they're so frustrated.
One of the things that we ask them upon intake is, how do they deal with stress, and teach them how to reduce stress in their lives.
Wow. So once they're aware that they have this, let's call it negative coping behaviors, or how do they handle anger, how do you get them into therapy if they need therapy, since you guys provide counseling?
One of the ways that we can do that is that we, you know, sort of put out a carrot. You know, if you go to counseling, this can happen for you. You know, we might be able to get you into our transitional living program. We might be able to help you secure employment. So talk to them about changes that can happen if they work through counseling and try to change some of these behaviors.
And another way also, all our intake that happens is done by a counselor. So the counselor already is building that relationship. In that, I always call them the airport of bridge, where every kid comes through a counselor. So the counselor is not just sitting in their office and providing the 45-minute sessions, but for the first 3 months, that counselor was providing this kid a shower, was getting them something to eat, was getting them, you know, some clean clothes, was getting them all those emergency needs that they needed right there. So they build that relationship, and now the counselor is able to open those doors and say, okay, you got something to eat, we got you stable with that. Let's talk a little bit about why you do this, the things you do. You know, you go out running once a week, but maybe you need more counseling, maybe you need evaluation, but that the trust has already been built after 2 or 3 months of working together.
Yeah, wonderful. And now talking about our LGBT kids who are victims of domestic violence and who have limited resources, how do you work with them?
Well, we try to do some research on places that will help them as far as shelter. We work with other agencies, GLASS, to help coordinate treatment with them. And we provide counseling here at Bridge. We provide a safe place for them to go to during the day. And we also have provided housing in our emergency residence. So we try to, the main thing is to keep them safe and to let them know that we're here for them. And that kind of goes a long way.
Right.
And just work with them on self-esteem building.
Right.
Connect them to medical resources to some of the community health centers that work with LGBT kids.
And our housing is not separated by LGBTQ kids and single parent or so forth. Our housing is more if you want and need a safe place and there's a bed available, you're welcome to use it no matter what you associate with. And so we've built our program in such that we're able to provide a safe way for every child, not just so every child can be treated as an individual, and it's important. And it's been one of the concerns for us for a lot of in the DV shelters. Some of the LGBTQ kids can't go to it because it's for all for moms, not for for males and so forth. So we
exactly.
Right. So we try to figure out how to partner and work and try to get these kids into a place where they can work, especially in the counseling, that they can work through that and then provide as much as we can for housing in our own units that we have.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And my experience working as an advocate in a domestic violence shelter, you know that we have rules and we're not prepared to house youth that are younger than 18. How can we, as an advocate, how can I connect if I have somebody walking through the door that is under 18? How can I connect that youth with a safe place to stay?
We provide housing for under 18 youth in our resident, and we work with them to reconnect them with family if that's the right way to go. If not, then we provide assistance to get them involved with the Department of Children and Families here in Boston.
Right, and I think in your for all of our listeners, that's definitely it's by policy and by state of how you deal with kids under the age of 17. So for under the age of 18. So for example, if you're housing, we like to keep families together, and I know poverty separates family enough as it is. So if there's a mom that has, you know, a 15 and a 16-year-old that's running away from domestic violence, and then now you have the 17-year-old almost about to turn 18 going into the DV shelter, a way for us to work on it is let's accept the family and bring a program like Bridge that works with the young kids that can support them while they're there. They can make sure the education, that they're going to school, that they can make sure they're safe, because once you separate the family, it becomes harder. And then the kids don't want to go anywhere because they want to stay close to mom or they want to stay close to dad. Mm-hmm. So what we do for kids that are under 17 that do not have a parental, they're unaccompanied and they don't have a parent, we work closely with them and they become ours. We have 2 17-year-olds living in our programs right now. And we'll be 3 17-year-olds living in our programs right now that, you know, that we will make sure that we parent them moving forward. And if it's not a DCF case, which is the Child Protective Services or the child welfare, it's really trying to make it it's not enough services around them so they don't become part of the child welfare system, and how to provide those services earlier than later. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that we always talk with our programs is to collaborate. Sometimes we are so busy. We're, of course, working in crisis. That's the nature of our work. And we don't have the time sometimes to build those collaborations. But learning about programs like yours that are there to provide the support and, you know, the collaboration that we need, it's essential. So
yes, and we should
so
do
much.
That way beforehand. Sometimes we do get a call when the kid's about to turn 18 on Monday, and it's like, but it's 5 days from now. Like, let's plan as soon as you have kids in your program, as soon as you check them in, let's start working together then. Then, you know, they only have a weekend left, and now you have to find another place for them. Because if you bring us on sooner than later, then we're able to provide better, more paths, easier for the kids to move out much better and be able to collaborate easier than the last minute. Okay, they have to move out tomorrow. This is now, like you said, the crisis. We're all in the crisis stage, and we really try to make sure, okay, we can handle crisis, but there's stuff that we can prevent sooner and give a better outcome if we get called way beforehand.
Yes, thank you so much for that. Let's talk a little bit about the national level. And I want to welcome Kristen. She's from MANI, like I mentioned. And MANI is the only national network of its kind that engages stakeholders across sectors to strengthen outcomes for youth and young adults at the highest risk for victimization and delinquency. And I want to mention also that MANI has been collaborating with us at the NRCBV. They've been so valuable in the development of our Runaway and Homeless Youth and Relationship Violence Toolkit. We've also collaborated in several conferences and webinars. So we admire the work that they do, and we know that they're great supporters of the NRCBV. So, Kristen, tell us a little bit about the national landscape when it comes to runaway and homeless youth.
Thanks, Yvonne. It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting us to participate. The national landscape, the one good thing and bad thing is that youth homelessness is on the radar. It's on the national radar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing the discussions, whether it's in whatever federal department we're going to, whether it's Department of Justice, Department of Education, Department of Labor, of course, Housing and Urban Development, and Health and Human Services. The program, similar to what Elizabeth and Richard were talking about, those are funded through the Family and Youth Services Bureau, provides direct funding to local agencies such as the Bridge Over Troubled Waters, and these are all over the country to provide a safety net of services like those described. It's not all the funding that these programs get, but it's a national investment specifically into those programs. And the other thing that the Family and Youth Service Bureau does is support partnerships specifically between RHY providers and domestic violence providers, understanding there's a real importance in that collaboration. One thing on the national level that we're also seeing, though all of these offices are saying, you know, helping young people that are homeless is extremely important to us, there's still a debate on what that definition of a homeless youth looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we define a runaway youth? And if developing that common definition is going to be key for the better coordination of all of these programs across the board. So what we talk about a lot is unaccompanied homeless youth, which are youth who are not in the care of their parent or guardian and do not have a permanent place to live. And these are normally in the range of that age, the 12 to 24, where you might have these young people that are out on the streets, couch surfing, staying at friends' houses,
mm-hmm.
moving from place to place. The young people are no different than the young people that are coming in with families into the domestic violence shelters. These are the other local providers that are going to provide services to them. What we do know is that services need to be developmentally responsive and include those geared to youth who have had experiences in domestic and violent relationships. So it's part of this local continuum of care for these young people in each community.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So how prevalent is this issue?
Well, I guess that's the bad part of homelessness, youth homelessness being on the national radar, is that it's a national issue. It's very prevalent across the board. Numbers vary because counting youth that are homeless can be difficult. As I mentioned, you know, they're going from place to place, staying on couches, staying at friends' houses, trading sex for a place to live. They're not in school. So you're not going to count them there. I mean, there are some in school, but
mm-hmm.
but a whole other group, they're not engaged in school. The number that's, you know, widely circulated is it's anywhere between 1.6 to 2.8 million youth that run away and are homeless each year.
Wow.
Yes, it's a sobering number of young mm-hmm. people that are not engaged. And what we know about some of that is that youth experience homelessness don't just become homeless. They're not suddenly running away or running to something or just suddenly it happens. What we're seeing in studies is that homelessness is a response to the experience and environments that they're incarnating, which could also include domestic violence and relationship violence. And the other issues Elizabeth and Richard touched on could be family dysfunction, sexual and physical abuse, aging out of the foster care system, not being connected to their community, work, or school. But we also know once on the streets, the chances of a homeless youth being victimized increases with each day, and I mean literally each day. For example, in a 2013 survey by a New York City service provider, one in four homeless youth had been a victim of sex trafficking or engaged in survivor
mm-hmm.
sex. And another data source suggests that it takes less than 3 days on average for a young person to be approached by somebody who wants to exploit them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very scary when we think about how prevalent the issue is, how many of these young people are out on the streets, and how at risk they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other things that we see is once you're out on the streets for any length of time, young people have an increased chance of not only being victimized, but also developing serious health, behavior, and mental health services or needs for those. They tend to show a higher rate of depression and post-traumatic stress, and they're likely, as they said, to fall victim to sexual exploitation, more likely to contract HIV, STDs because of the likelihood of sexual exploitation, rape, and sexual assault, and resorting to legal activities such as stealing, forced entry, gang activities, things they need to do to survive. We see increased pregnancies because young women, again, are being exploited and their ability to help take care of themselves is limited. So the other thing that we do, all hope is not gone. The other thing we definitely know about these young people is that they are very strong and resilient. And when we see them attached to caring adults, connections, community resources, such as programs like the Bridge Over Troubled Waters, connecting with domestic violence providers, and also having the opportunity to develop in a safe environment and grow, that these youth are really survivors and leaders in our community.
Definitely, definitely. So what is MANI doing to address youth homelessness and bring about awareness to programs and policies that make a difference?
Well, as you mentioned, MANI's mission is to increase positive outcomes for youth at highest risk for victimization, and this population is one of those. We do this by being a leader in cultivating evidence, and we look to unearth, research, and share innovations of what does and does not work with the population, as well as increase that cross-sector collaboration. I know we keep saying the importance of the collaboration, and we think of that across the board, but in particular with the domestic violence workers as well as the runaway and homeless youth providers. We do this through connecting with over 10,000 providers on an annual basis, and we provide training and consulting to about 3,000 additional of these providers, actually. But what we do most is work very deeply with our membership of agencies, which is over 150 agencies in 48 states. It includes agencies like the Bridge Over Troubled Waters. And we work with them to unearth those innovations. What are they doing that's really working? Who are their partners, and how do they make that partnership work? And then we use those to support increasing those positive outcomes for young people and sharing that with leaders, researchers, policymakers, and other change agents in the community. And then we work with folks like you to promote the positive outcomes for youth, you know, making sure that, you know, we work with those other advocates like the National Resource Center for Domestic Violence so people know what the issues are and how they can respond. And sit at as many of those federal tables and work groups as we can to keep the voice of the young person out there and the programs that serve them. I mean, overall, our work is to leverage the work of the folks in the field. You guys all know what you're doing, and you're doing it well. And we want to open that cross-sector dialogue, promote collaboration so that together, whether we're a domestic violence provider and runaway homeless youth provider, an employment education provider, that together we keep our youth safe, keep open opportunities for them to thrive, and promote positive outcomes.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kristen. We love collaborating with MANI and with other youth organizations like the National Runaway Safe Line. We're running out of time, and I would want to give you a chance to share any last thoughts, and if we can start with Elizabeth.
Well, first, thank you. Thank you, Kristen, for giving us the national landscape, and thank you, Yvonne, for bringing our voice into all the providers. I think we just need to talk to support the kids to move forward, and let's have more open dialogue. Call us. Our number is 617-423-9575. Richard's been here for 34 years. And he's a counselor here, so we like to have conversations, and let's work together to make sure we stop the cycle of the kids continuing to either harm themselves or harm someone else, and support each other to for the great work we do, I guess, that we all do together. I think we're better together than we are separate.
Exactly. And Kristen, any final thoughts?
I think the last thing I would share is that we together continue to celebrate our common work and purpose.
Yes.
And continue to look for those increased collaborations that we can, you know, form together in our communities so we can intervene early to support these young people, break the cycle of violence, and hopefully prevent them from needing additional domestic violence services in the future.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you both, well, the three of you, both organizations, for joining us today. We are impressed by the work that Bridge Over Troubled Waters is doing in Boston. And, of course, MANI. We love all of the staff at MANI there, just, and your continued support is very, very valuable for us. And remember, like Kristen said, between 1.6 and 2.8 million youth run away each year. And these numbers are unacceptable. We need to, you know, we need to do something about it. And in particular, when you consider the fact that many of these kids are going to end up on the streets, we need to do something, especially our local domestic violence programs. We need to start collaborating. America's runaway and homeless youth, they're not invisible, and we need to make sure that we're there for them. So thank you for joining us. Thank you, Richard, Elizabeth, and Kristen.
Yeah.
And we'll talk some more at a later date. Take care. And for our listeners, thank you for joining us. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.